This is Basically Theory 2, Unit 2, Part 4, Electrical Burns. Viewer discretion is advised. I do have a video on here that contains some graphic footage, FYI. If you keep a straight face or a concerned face when you see the video, you're fine. If you smile, you might be a psychopath, and this is probably not the program for you. Just FYI. Electrical burns. I'm a little worried that you guys are laughing at this. So we'll look at alternating current and direct current. Those are the two kinds of current we're concerned with, low voltage, high voltage. Anyone ever shocked themselves with an outlet? Yeah, most people. Isn't that weird, eh? Okay, anyone want to tell us how stupid you were? Sure. Of course not. It's never.
It's a pool pump there, just standard every day, every 2 days there, clean up, filter, turn it off first,
Pool pump, yeah.
So go do like usual, put my hand, wrap it, turn the power off, and I just get rocked to it, and I might shoot.
Wow. What was wrong with it?
A week after, but found out because my mother changed it to a different plug.
Yeah.
And this plug didn't have the ground plug, but she decided she was going to break it off and make it fit.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so your mom tried to kill you. Have you guys reconciled your differences since then? Like, do you guys still get along okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Who else wants to share an electrocution story? Yeah, Alyssa.
I was convinced that the toaster was relatively safe, so I always use like the knife to fall.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say I was convinced it was safe, so I took it in the tub with me. You know? I'm having a candlelit bath and I really feel like a piece of toast. Let me okay. So you stuck a knife in it.
Yeah.
Good one.
On multiple occasions, and it only happened once, but.
Well, of course it only happens once. That's why we get insurance, right? So how big of a shock was it?
It wasn't too bad. I got warned on multiple occasions that I shouldn't be doing it, and I'm doing it anyways.
Yeah. life lesson, right? Yeah, Ingrid.
So I grew up on a farm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I'd go and, you know, feed the bulls and that kind of thing. And of course, we had an electric fence.
Oh.
And I only ever touched it once, and that was enough of a lesson. I thought my heart was going to literally explode.
It was that bad. Did it knock you over?
Yeah. Yelled, and it was like getting kicked in the chest.
Oh.
It hurt.
Nasty. Anyone else do something stupid they want to?
Yeah. First time I stuck a fork in an electric socket.
Oh, you stuck a fork? That's pretty.
That's like top of the notch, girls. That's
like the toaster, I get. Mom trying to kill me, I get. But willfully putting a fork in an outlet, that I don't quite understand yet.
When I was in high school, they felt like a shock collar, like for your dog.
Yeah.
And then it was like a party trick every time, like, who could leave it on the longest.
Oh, you got some brilliant friends.
Yeah.
Leave it on. Now, what did you have to do to get the shock collar to go off? Did you have to bark or something?
No, it was
or?
Like a remote. Like
oh, it's a remote. Oh.
That's
deeply disturbing. Shock party. What do you call those square batteries? Are they? Are they? They're not the D. They're 9-volt. 9-volt battery. Yeah. So this is way before your time, but I had a transistor radio. And we decided instead of plugging into batteries, because we didn't have batteries, my friend and I thought we'd take an electrical cord, cut it, strip the wires, and just put the two wires into the holes where you connect the battery into the transistor. So we did that, and it went zzz, and it blew up, and the two of us got knocked across the room. So there you go. So lesson here, when you have kids, watch them all the time. Like, you can never take your eyes off kids, even more than a puppy. Like, puppy chews on your furniture, you know, it's not a big deal, but you know, your kid chews on electrical cord, it's not good. Serious burns happening there. So The thing about electric burns is that the depth of the burn is unseen. You maybe sustain a shock from a particular point of entry on the skin, but the damage happens subsurface. So, from a assessment perspective, we want to determine the voltage and the mechanism of injury. Is this electrical outlets or is it high tension wires? With alternating current, there's a higher risk of someone going into ventricular fibrillation. With direct current, which was what we use in defibrillators, there's a higher risk of asystole, of getting shocked and ending up asystolic. Lightning strikes, we'll talk about separately because they're an interesting case. So we treat all incidents seriously, even when the patient states they feel fine. So we had, I'll give you an example. This wasn't my call. This was a call that described to me by somebody, a medic I worked with or a student or something, graduate, I can't remember which, but the story is that this lady had some sort of short in her kitchen, and when she touched some appliances, she got little shocks, nothing serious. But at one point she was doing something with the microwave and opening the refrigerator door, and she got such an intensive shock that her hand gripped the refrigerator door and actually tore the handle right off. And after that, she felt fine, right? And she didn't feel any pain per se in her arm, but her husband called 911, and when they got there, the medics assessed her, and they spent quite a bit of time convincing her to go to the hospital, given the intensity of the shock and the fact that the shock was so intense that her muscles contracted to the point where she actually ripped the handle of the refrigerator door off, right? But she's saying, I'm fine. So what happens is, when you get an electric shock, there's heat that transferred through the muscle, and the heat will follow the path of least resistance. And that can actually cause blood to coagulate in your vessels. It can cause rhabdomyolysis, which is breakdown of muscle tissue. And when you have rhabdomyolysis, it releases potassium, it releases myoglobin. Myoglobin clogs your kidneys, can put you into kidney failure. Now, an electric shock to the arm, probably not going to cause significant rhabdomyolysis or hyperkalemia, like high serum potassium and things like that. But it's a worry, right? Because you worry that the vessels are superheated, you worry about coagulation, you worry about what complications that might happen to this lady. So she should go to the hospital, probably should be admitted for 24 hours. And it's a good thing she did, because she did have clotting problems. She started to lose sensation in the right arm. And overnight, apparently, she went into cardiac arrest, and they were able to defibrillate her and get her back. Young, healthy, no medical history, no meds, no allergies, but one shock with the refrigerator and the microwave. And had she stayed home, she would have been dead, right? So she was lucky. So the take-home message is, when you encounter patients have been shocked, even minor shocks, take all precautions. Recommend they go to the hospital to be seen, to be observed for a few hours. I don't want to deal with that. That's what ventricular fibrillation looks like. It's a shockable rhythm, so we shock it with a defibrillator. So interesting, in the early days of electricity, you know, there was a, you probably heard the battle between, who's the inventor of DC electricity? Yeah, it was Edison and Tesla, that's right. Yeah, thank you. And so anyway, Tesla ended up winning because alternating current was more efficient. Direct current required power stations close to every home, whereas alternating current was more stable and could be transferred from long distances. And and there were, you know, there were some nasty, unethical things that happened. I think Edison showed that alternating current killed elephants, and tried to scare tactics to get people to buy into his direct current over alternating current. But anyway, people who were working on the hydro lines, the first hydro lines, some of them were getting electrocuted and dying. So the power company went to Johns Hopkins University and said, can we do anything about this? Can you do some research on this? And so what they found was, I can't remember, they used pigs. I want to say pigs or rats, but I think it was pigs. So they intentionally shock these pigs. I'm sorry, but that's what they did. And they found they went into ventricular fibrillation, most commonly from high tension wires. And they oddly discovered that the way to get them out of ventricular fibrillation was to deliver a counter shock using direct current. So that worked, and I don't know how successful they were in saving the lives of people working on the lines, you know, after they were shocked, but providing a counter shock seemed to work in pigs. So that was a good thing. So now, if you read any of the articles of literature in medicine, anything to do with defibrillation or something, you'll often see the term counter shock. And counter shock simply means defibrillation. So it dates back to the early 1900s and the research done at Johns Hopkins universities, but that's where the term counter shock comes from. So if you hear, you know, an older doctor say, let's deliver a counter shock, it doesn't mean let's throw the patient on the counter and shock them there. It means DC current. Okay, fine, that wasn't that very funny. I've lost my mouse. All right. So high voltage is anything greater than 1,000 volts. And so high tension wires would cause high voltage injuries. And with high voltage injuries, typically you get an entrance wound and exit wound, a little like a high velocity gunshot wound. You get an entrance wound, exit wound, and the exit wound is usually larger. We simply describe the wounds like GSWs. We don't say this is the entrance wound, this is the exit wound. That's up to the pathologist. We just say the patient has a small wound here and a large wound here. And everyone else can decide which is entrance, which is exit. So the current seeks a path of least resistance. That's blood, nerves, could be muscle in different orders. And it's likened to crush injuries because high tension electrical shock will damage muscle to such an extent that you get breakdown of muscle, and so rhabdomyolysis, release of myoglobin, clogging of the nephrons and the kidneys, so kidney failure, acidosis, all sorts of complications associated with crush injury. And crush injury is not just simply blunt injury. Crush injury is an example of crush injury would be someone who is pinned under a fallen building for hours and they've got a heavy, something heavy weighing on their muscles, causing muscle breakdown. That's a crush injury. You don't get a crush injury in a, you know, if you get squashed between a truck and a wall, that's not a crush injury, that's just blunt injury. So crush injury is usually takes hours. Some people liken having a stroke or having a single episode and lying on the floor for 12 hours to a crush injury, in the sense that if you've been lying on a floor for many, many hours, you're gonna get rhabdomyolysis and you might get renal failure. So myoglobin and potassium gets released. It can lead to life-threatening arrhythmias from the hyperkalemia. It can lead to renal failure from the myoglobinuria. When you're in clinical, if you ever get someone who's, you hear they've had rhabdomyolysis, ask about the urine, because urine takes on a dark color, and particularly a dark rusty color from myoglobin. So dark urine usually means one of two things. They've got really poor urine output, so it's really concentrated, or they've got myoglobinuria. So bone tends to resist electrical current, but also, as a result, retains more heat. So you can literally cook from the inside out from the heat of the bones. That's a nasty thought, eh? It's like having, you know, it's like your femur is a overheating curling iron. All right, so this is a guy who gets electrocuted from high tension wire. I'm not sure if this, I think I actually downloaded this video, but have a look, see what happens.
Thank you.
So you can see the smoke coming out of his, looks like his abdomen. He's also got flames coming out of his head. He's on fire. Yeah. I know. Sorry? I think he touched it twice, yeah. Yeah. So
it
probably reflex. So that's what electricity does. Very, very intense. Very, very intense. Probably super heat inside his skull. Actually blew a part of the skull out. You could see flames coming from his skull. And you can see flames coming from his pants or somewhere around there. So I don't know where his exit wounds are. It's a very fuzzy video, but yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, fair question. Well, number one, this guy is probably going to be code 5. But number two, the answer is I would let fire take care of that, get him off the train. But yeah, it's safe. So as long as you're not touching the wire, the wires are damaged or dangling or something, yeah, it's safe to touch him. So there's no current going through him at, you know, at that time. But yeah, that's a good question. But something like this, this is where fire and paramedicine work well together, right? This is their area of expertise. Yeah, so I told you it was disturbing, eh? All right, so flash burns, electrical flash burns. These are considered pure thermal burns, typically involving the face and the hands. Mechanism, so an electrician sticks a tool in a connection box and causes a short circuit arc and a flash. I had this guy come over to do electrical work on my house once. I never hired him again because I'm not a fix-it kind of guy. I'm like probably, you know, of Canada's worst handyman, I'm probably down the bottom 10. Actually took me 10 years to get the, or 8 years to get the courage to build a gate for my fence, my first house. But anyway, so I like to hire people to do things. So I hired this electrician to do some work on my electrical box, and we were talking, and he asked me what I did for a living, and I told him, and then he started, people, you know, whenever you tell people you're a paramedic, they start telling you about all their injuries, and he starts telling me about all his electrical injuries. So you can see why I didn't hire him again, right? Because I thought, well, you know, people get hurt when I'm around, and number two, he gets hurt even when I'm not around. So the combination, you know, I really just don't want to deal with it. So he never came back. I didn't tell him why, but he actually called me a couple of times, said, you know, if you need any more work, I'd be like, nah. Nope, I'm not having anyone die in my house, thank you very much. You go sustain your injuries somewhere else. So, resulting flash burns may cause clothing to ignite, obviously. And this is what happened with this guy who touched the high tension wire, right, is his clothes ignited. Like the heat was so intense coming out of his body from the entrance wound, the exit wound, that his clothes caught fire. And of course, if you get flash burns to the face, that can cause jeopardize the airway, cause airway swelling. So lightning strikes are interesting. And there was one that happened about 4 or 5 years ago, I want to say, and I think it was in Newmarket, but don't quote me on that. It was an outdoor event. There were a bunch of tents, and a storm came along, and everyone ran under the tent, which turned out to be not such a good thing. Brock, were you going to say something? Yeah, maybe it was Durham, but I thought it was Newmarket, but I could be wrong. But anyway, so the point is, there were lightning strikes, and if a lightning strike happens, say, let's say where the library window is right now from where I'm standing, if there was nothing between us and the library window, you get a flashover burn. So it would be, that would be pretty close, and you get a flashover heat, and sometimes that'll actually burn your clothes off. So if you ever go to a golf course or an outdoor event where there's been a lightning strike and people injured, don't be surprised. Literally, don't be surprised to see people who've got just like tatters of shirt left and just their underwear on, you know, and other clothes burnt off, because that's what happens. You get this flashover. Now, the thing about lightning burns is reverse triage applies. So with a lightning strike, if people are close enough to the lightning strike, they experience the full force of the direct current, and that may cause their heart to go asystolic. Right, so they go asystolic. Now, if they're young and healthy and have a healthy heart, they go flatline. And what happens, though, eventually, is they should spontaneously start to generate impulses and go back into a sinus rhythm. But what can happen in lightning strikes is they go asystolic, and their heart may start to beat again, but the direct current can cause muscle tetany. So the chest wall muscles may be just sort of locked rigidly, and they may not be able to breathe. These people are usually unconscious. They go asystolic. They may sustain a rhythm. They're apneic, so they can't breathe, and eventually they deteriorate into a VF. And that's how they end up staying dead. Now, if the lightning strike hit within, I'm just throwing a number out here, within a 10-foot perimeter or so, they're going to be dead, and they're going to be so badly burnt internally, nothing you're going to do is going to get them back, but you're going to work them anyway if they're not code 5. But here's the thing. They're young and healthy. They've got a healthy heart. If you can get them quickly enough, you want to start CPR as soon as you can on the dead people, and CPR may be enough to get their heart started again, CPR and ventilation in a lightning strike, right? Whereas every other triage, as we talked about last week, the dead people you leave alone and you look after the living. In a lightning strike, forget the living people. They're going to stay alive. Look after the dead people and do CPR. CPR, hook them up to the defibrillator, see if they're in a shockable rhythm, need to be shocked, and look after the cardiac arrest patients. So it's a reverse triage principle applies for lightning strikes. That's kind of the unique and interesting thing. Now, will you remember this when you're out in the field and your first lightning strike happens year 17? That's the big question, right? So this is why on the way to calls, we chat with our partners. We talk about, like, how are we going to manage this? Who's going to triage? What are we going to do? How are we going to deal with this? If I'm working with a PCP partner, the PCP partner is probably going to triage, because the ACP should be available for the critical patients. But if there are two people VSA, we're both going to go and start CPR right away. And if there's a third person VSA, we'll try to get a bystander to do chest compressions. And we'll try to get CPR going on as many people as we can. Because it may just take, you know, a minute or less of compressions if you get there quickly enough to get a pulse back. So. But lightning strikes, flash burns are very common. Clothes get burnt off. That's what asystole looks like. Asystole is never a pristine flat line, never. Even if they've been buried for 3 days, if you were to dig them up and put them on a monitor, they'd still be a wavy line, right? Because there's still cellular activity going on 3 days post-death. So it's never a pristine flat line. You watch TV shows and they go flat line, it's a perfect glowing green flat line, right? So you can say to your family now that he's not dead. That's just the monitor's not hooked up properly. It's true. It's not an issue anymore with the cardiac monitors today, because I feel really old when I say this, but if you don't have the defib pads or something is not hooked up quite properly on your cardiac monitor, you won't get a flat line. You'll get a, with the LifePak or the Zoll, you'll get a dotted line. And that means your monitor's not hooked up properly or your defib pads aren't connected properly. That tells you that's not asystole, right? Should be should be a wavering flat line for asystole. And asystole is usually, you know, comes with a very poor prognosis, but a lightning strike, we're going to do chest compressions on them. And you might actually convert asystole into a perfusing rhythm just with CPR. That's the beauty. That'd be amazing, eh? Save 3 or 4 lives in like 10 minutes. Boom, boom, boom. Just little chest compressions. You'd be like a massive, massive hero. Any questions about electrical burns?
Yeah.